MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame starting May 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. It is Danny and Iffy here. We're still on hiatus. I hope that everyone out there is being loud and is being safe. Iffy, this is the first time I've like seen you across from me in a bit.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's been a time, you know, just trying to stay active, stay positive, get out. You know, I went to a protest yesterday. It was great. It's a good time, and still all the while doing Super Punch stuff.
Yeah. So this week we wanted to re-air an episode we did on queer characters in gaming. As you may or may not know, June is Pride Month. And we've actually had some great advancements as far as queer representation in gaming. On this particular episode that we're re-airing, we had Cannon Spackman from Sony and our friend comedian Christopher Smith Bryant, who's the head of the LA Gaming Society here, to talk about iconic gay characters in this community. Something that we wanted to remind everyone is that Black and brown trans women are why we have Pride. They were the ones fighting at Stonewall and protesting against police brutality. It is because of them that people like me get to come out as openly bi. They have done so much work in this community. So we just wanted to remember them during Pride. And hopefully you guys are all tweeting and posting and showing up and stuff for this community.
Yeah, definitely that. Well, I second all of those things. But I also want to do say a resounding you can't, all Black lives matter, which is always a scary phrase to say because it seems like you're about to say all lives matter, but no, I'm just me. All Black lives matter. If you didn't know, 20 Black men ganged up on a trans woman a couple of days ago when we were recording this, June 4th. At a Black Lives Matter rally, which is disgusting, despicable, and I hope all 20 of those men get caught and dealt with, because you can't sit there in a Black Lives Matter rally and then attack another Black life. You get over whatever BS ideals. I have to remember we don't curse on this show. I had to stop myself. And really stand up for one another out there. Because if you're not for all Black lives, then you're not for Black lives, period.
Yes, all Black lives matter. Black trans lives matter. We hope you enjoy this episode on queer characters in gaming. Stay loud, stay strong, stay nerdy.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Nerdificent. I'm Iffy Whiteyway, and sitting in a new corner of the table.
I've been kicked out.
Yeah. Got the boot.
It is I, your other co-host, Danny Fernandez, and today we are joined up top by comedian, executive producer at Enemies of Dorothy, and event coordinator at LAGS, which is the LA Gaming Society, Christopher Smith Bryant.
Yay. Talk here. I'm here. This is where I talk. Yes,
you're sitting in my spot. It feels weird.
I feel weird, and I've never been here before. No, I'm an event coordinator at LAGS, the LA Gaming Society, so I'm super excited to be on your show and talk about gay stuff.
Yeah, so we have another. I know, spoiler, you already said what our episode is.
Oh, darn it.
I'm just kidding. They can see it in the title. And sitting next to him is the technical program manager at PlayStation, a gaming enthusiast, and LGBTQ activist, Cannon Spackman.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I wonder, how did y'all meet? How do you two know each other?
Oh, my God.
We did go on one date.
Okay. I'm sorry. I did not know this.
No, it's okay. It didn't go well. But we're friends now.
So it went well enough.
Yeah, I think. Well. I think sometimes you meet people, especially being LGBT, you meet someone that you have an attraction for, but you're like, I'm not sexually attracted, but I'm so attracted to this person, mm-hmm. and then you're like, oh, it's just because our souls are like friend souls. We run the LA Gaming Society together, which is one of the largest gay video game groups in America, where we create these giant parties and programs for LGBT nerds that live in Los Angeles to kind of meet up. And it's just been a really cool way. I mean, I met Cannon through that, and we've met multiple friends through that as well.
Yeah, you guys actually had the Dragon Ball Fighterz tournament. That I was at that,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we had a great time with Funimation doing a Dragon Ball FighterZ tournament. It's a really great way because I feel like, especially LGBT people who move to LA, they feel a little lost. And especially if they're nerds and they might have, you know, some sort of social issues like Asperger's or whatever. It's a great way for them to, I said that right? Okay. It's a great way for them to meet with other nerds. I did it. To other nerds who can't socialize, like I can't socialize.
Yeah. Chris and I's, the extent of our friendship is sending memes to each other like 4 times a day. That's how we communicate.
That's all of my friendships. And then that's it. And I'll see Danny like once every 6 months. But I feel closer to her because of our memes.
That's a millennial friendship. Yeah. If you and I need to up our meme game, we send them here and there.
Yeah, yeah. We are meme light. Usually it's just tea. Only tea.
True. We spill a lot of tea in our chat. So I wanted to talk about a little bit, Cannon, about you work with WITS. Is that what it's called? Women in Technology?
Women in Technology at Sony. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that group?
Sure. So one of the really cool things about being at PlayStation now is we're experiencing a lot of change for the better. We went from two different companies at Sony that were considered kind of the redheaded stepchild. We were the gaming division. And now since the PlayStation 4 has launched, we've kind of become the crown jewel of the Sony companies. And that's ushered in a lot of really positive change. So our headquarters moved from Tokyo to San Mateo, and we're kind of embracing a lot of modern culture things and culture changes to kind of, I guess, invite more people to be a part of what it is that we do at Sony. So what has come with that has been a lot of diversity initiatives, and one of them was making what we call employee resource groups. And we have employee resource groups. There's 5 at Sony currently. There's Women in Technology at Sony, which is our women's group. There's Proud at Sony, which is our LGBT group. There's PAN, which is PlayStation African American Network at Sony. I think it's PANS. And then there's a 4th and a 5th one. I don't remember what the other ones are. But having all those groups at Sony has been a really, really good experience because it's been able to bring people I work with together in a really different way, in a really interesting way. And it's had a lot of really interesting effects on our work culture and on the projects we do and pretty much everything. It's been really great.
Well, with Cannon and I especially, because we're running events with the LA Gaming Society, PlayStation let us hold their first LGBT E3 party.
Oh, that's so cool.
Which was really amazing because we just like put up an event like, okay, this will be fine. And luckily we put up an event on Facebook because like within a week, I think there were 2,000 people that clicked interested in it, and we're like, oh no!
Sorry, were you having this at your house? Because
No, we luckily had an event space for it, but I remember Cannon's like, I don't know how we're going to fill this, and we're like, oh, we're not going to be able to get everyone in, but it was kind of a cool moment, especially because I don't think anyone realized how many LGBT nerds there are and how underrepresented they are as a group. Mm-hmm. And it was an amazing way, especially to get a lot of people who worked for PlayStation to kind of be like, oh my God, this is a huge, huge, huge group. And it especially was awesome because they had the E3 presentation from PlayStation actually opened up with a lesbian moment, a lesbian kiss between two characters for The Last of Us 2. Mm-hmm. So it was just a really powerful moment for all of us.
Also, what it was really cool too was because Ellie being lesbian was alluded to in mm-hmm. the DLC, but not confirmed. And I feel like a lot of LGBT characters have to deal with that, with mm-hmm. the off-screen, you know, representation where it's like, we're supposed to assume that. Or even like, you know, to take it back to Nickelodeon, like a few people were wishy-washy with the end of Legend of Korra because mm-hmm. it mm-hmm. wasn't as strong of an ending to really confirm everything. So to kind of just have that kiss there and was like, yep, we're here. I even thought it was like really cool because, you know, I think just from the perspective of being like a Black person and wanting to see, you know, representation, it's cool. Like it's funny how like we can cheer each other on. Like I feel like some people in our respective like, you know, groups think that it's a contest when it really is just we want everybody winning. Mm-hmm. Like, I was hyped to see Crazy Rich Asians do well. I'm like, yes, get it, you know? And so I feel like, you know, it's just like there's room for everyone. And it is funny because, you know, when you do have like so many, I think white dude bros think like, oh, man, this is dumb and trying to, you know, SJW and all this when they don't even know. Like, I think it's crazier because I feel like LGBTQ is a little more invisible. Like, you can, like, someone can be Chris's homeboy and not know that he is gay and then be like, what do you think of this LGBT, you know, SJW always clogging up, trying to ruin my games, you know?
They would have to be blind and deaf to not know that I'm gay.
Yeah,
but
I love it.
But you would actually be surprised, though.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, they just don't. Sometimes they don't think of it. Like, they just don't. What were you going to say?
You are wearing a Sailor Moon necklace with
a Sailor Moon necklace. Yeah. Another very LGBT pro. Yeah.
Totally. Yes. I mean, all of the sailors, I feel like in general, but specifically Neptune and Uranus are. So, and I saw that you were posting that you were watching it this past weekend.
You know what was amazing is for a show that was in the 90s, there was a character that said that they admitted of having a crush on Usagi. And most animes at the time, the main character, if someone of the same sex admitted that they were attracted to them, they would be like, whoa, gross, or like try to make a comedic moment out of it. And the weird thing was Usagi was just like, she took care of the person's feelings. She said, I don't have the same, you know, emotions that you feel towards me, but it was just like really sweet about it. And it was such a progressive show in that way for its time that
mm-hmm.
it means so much to, you know, LGBT nerds for that reason.
Well, I wanted to ask you guys, like, what were some of the characters and shows that you latched onto as a child? Or when did you first feel like you saw yourself in media or were represented?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Do you have one offhand?
This is going to be horrible to say, but I think it started with fan fiction.
Okay. Yeah, like, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, it really started with like fan web comics, like even just seeing, because I remember as far as like I'm really into comic books, as a Marvel fan, the Young Avengers was kind of like, and is it North Star as well from X-Men?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That were the first like big ones from Marvel, and then Batwoman. But it kind of started before then seeing like web comics on the internet. Some of them were very racy of different like characters that I would ship together. Like
yes.
People, you know, or like fan fiction. And sometimes it's just sweet to see people that I like ship together. I think that was actually the first thing I had because there really, as a kid, there wasn't really that much representation
mm-hmm.
as someone who's, you know, turning 30 soon. There really wasn't, as a kid, any representation, especially in video games. Birdo. Like, that was it.
Yeah,
Birdo.
Yeah.
A transgender bird dinosaur, Sailor Moon. That was it. In Sailor Moon, they changed in the American version, mm-hmm. they changed the lesbian scouts to be cousins. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us at the time were like, what type of relationship?
I know.
Like, are you having with your cousin? I mean, it's just weird.
I don't know if I slip my tongue into my cousin's mouth, but sometimes that's how people kiss. Yeah. Cannon, what about you? Like, what were, if not like that you felt represented, what were some of the characters and shows that you at least latched onto as a kid? Like, what characters did you like?
So that's a good question. I grew up watching He-Man, which I think is why I'm gay. No, I'm just
kidding. No, that makes sense. Makes sense.
I think the earliest video game reference that I can think of comes from Dragon Age. I don't know if anyone ever played Dragon Age.
Oh, yeah.
But it was the first game I played that had gay optional romances, mm-hmm. which I played that game every which way to get all of the gay romances because I wanted, because it was like my first exposure
yeah.
to that.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy crap, like even replayed it as a female character and romance all the female characters that you could romance. And it was just cool to have that option because I'd never had that option before.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, that actually reminds, I now can think of the very first video game for me was The Sims.
Oh, yeah.
The Sims, because I think I remember them adding like LGBT relationships, and there's a huge controversy around it. But when you could add, when you could woohoo in the bed, like that was my first gay porn, was pixelated woohoo in Sims.
Oh, yeah. That was wild, too. Just the pixelated like woohoo, and then it would have like almost the fighting smoke.
Yeah.
Like, okay, y'all going crazy, Simsies.
That's yeah. so I was funny. Like, is this what it's supposed to be like?
And then when you see it's not pixelated, what? I would say fan fiction was how I explored my sexuality as well. And also just like anime. What is it called? I forgot the name of it now. When it's not the manga, but it's like fan made manga. Can't remember. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Anyways, there's a lot of exploration in there.
But I was able to be, I guess the best way to describe it is a passenger in that experience, because my best friend in high school came out to me in like the summer between eighth grade and freshman year. And it was true.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm a good guy, guys. I'm one of the good
You're
ones.
You're very woke.
I'm hashtag woke. Yeah, no. And it's so funny because to me, that's also kind of been my frustration with bigotry, because it was that simple. It was just like, you're still the same. Why would I care like who you love? It was so for me to think back and as a like 13-year-old have no inhibitions and no like, oh, man, this, that or whatever. It's like crazy to see how grown adults will like go back and forth on this with nothing. And also, I'm like a strong proponent of like my own business, you know, and if it has nothing to do with you, why would you even have an opinion on it? But I'm sidetracking a bit, but like even him growing up, it was the same thing. He really kind of gravitated towards Sailor Moon because, you know, it was that same thing, because they're like the uncut version, they're lesbians, it's tight. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, I'm trying to think, because we were both hyper nerds, like we watched DBZ together.
DBZ has a lot of queer-esque mm-hmm. characters. I remember
Frieza is gay. I will bring this back every Frieza is the gay icon.
We've talked about this. It's Zarbon. So I remember that you posted like a picture. I think it was a Dragon Ball Z related.
I think I was like, in my underwear next to Frieza, and we were both sticking our butts out, as you do on Instagram.
That sounds about
and
right.
Somebody was like, don't bring your homosexuality into Dragon Ball Z. And I'd be like, have you watched Dragon Ball Z?
Well,
have
my
you
favorite is
it?
Danny then went off on this person. She's like, oh, you think you know about Dragon Ball Z? And I was like, this comment. I should say I brought
the facts. Yeah.
I used to post these like Belfies on Instagram, and I just put like, you know, hashtag butt or whatever. But I think people, straight guys, would just see a feminine figure and be turned on by it, and then like then look at the picture and then realize, ooh, it's a guy. And
with
I think
a very
that's
very good butt.
Yeah, exactly. We've all been there. All men, you know. You're like, is this a booty model?
And you're like,
I've done that with your post, because I follow so many booty models that like I'll see Chris come up, but I'm not reading the screen. I'm like, oh, nice butt. I was like, oh, look, it's Chris again.
But you're very supportive. You're very supportive. But I think that's what happens is then he got angry and then tried to school me on Dragon Ball Z. And Dani was not having it. She was like, no.
Well, it's so fascinating to me because anime, they don't have necessarily the same weird, religious, extremely structured, like, homophobia and stuff that seems to be over here, where they made, where Akira Toriyama made a lot of these characters kind of gender fluid for a reason and has commented on that. So it's just frustrating to me that people are like, no, it's this, when I don't.
Well, that's what's so funny is all the like super weebs, you know, who want to copy everything about Japan will just skip over that part, which is that Japan's not having their huge obsession over masculinity, where there is that kind of gender fluidity. There's so many anime characters that are androgynous that can go either way. I mean, even like Devilman Crybaby, like, you know, spoilers, but I'm going to give you 30 seconds to speed past this if you really want to see it. But at the end, when Satan has like straight up breasts and it's like never addressed, it's never like a thing. It's like, yeah, no, I am a man. I have breasts. I am beautiful. And this is, and let me destroy the world, you know?
Japan culture is very interesting, though. Because they still have homophobia, but it's different. And I believe homosexuality is illegal in Japan for Japanese citizens. Is that correct, Canon?
Yeah. So it's an interesting law they have. I go to Japan fairly regularly for work. So I have a little bit of experience with Japanese culture, and it's fascinating. And I love going to Japan. But one of the really interesting things I learned very early on was, so things like prostitution are illegal between Japanese citizens, but prostitution between a Japanese citizen and a non-Japanese citizen is not legal. Wow. And you'll find a lot of things.
Or is legal.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
What about homosexuality in Japan?
So being gay is not illegal in Japan, but if you ask any Japanese people, like, are there gay people here? They will tell you no. It's a very fascinating thing. Yet in a lot of their art and our culture, you'll see a lot of gender non-conforming people. You'll see a lot of queer people. You'll see people that don't fit the normal gender spectrum. So they're very comfortable with it in their art and in their style and in their culture. But if you ask them straight up, like, what is the LGBT community here? They'll say, oh, Japan doesn't have those.
That,
like, that doesn't happen here.
Is bizarre.
And then they'll say, if you do see it here, it's because foreigners have come here and they've, like,
I wonder if the art is like their expression of it, because like if we're just looking at anime and like, it's so, not all of it, but a lot of it is sexual and sexual between women and women, men and women, man and man, like just a large spectrum. And so, yeah, I find that fascinating.
Yeah, it is interesting, and that's just a whole nother deep dive of a whole nother culture, because that there's just so many nuanced levels to it. I don't think this is okay at all, because to me, the way it sounds on paper is like appropriation. You're willing to make money off of the imagery and having it in your media, but when it comes time to actually allow it to happen, to allow certain people to be free, now we're going to pretend they don't exist.
Well, that's their kind of way of dealing with anything in Japanese culture. Is just if they don't like something, or if it makes them feel uncomfortable, they kind of are just shut it down and like, this isn't happening. What are you talking about?
I did want to talk about, sorry to transition
no,
so
good.
Harshly.
It's okay.
I wanted to talk about some queer characters in nerddom.
Okay.
So some of the ones that I personally love would be Xena Warrior Princess. I don't know if you watched her at all. Yeah, she's amazing. You and I, Chris, have talked extensively about Wonder Woman. So, and
who is she? She's officially bisexual now, right? Which, I mean,
is
basically been hinted forever, but.
And was then openly confirmed. But for me, it was frustrating to see people upset about this when it was like, she lives on an island of all women.
Yeah.
Women know how to pleasure other women. There's no way that these goddesses are just sleeping alone every night by themselves.
I don't think anyone that's read a Wonder Woman comic was upset by it. I think it was like a lot of people who like, Linda Carter, you know what I mean? Those type of people.
No, but it's so true. And another thing that I would have to say before I move off of her is that in the movie with her being with Steve Trevor, and people were like, well, clearly she's not bi. And I'm like, no, it's just the clock struck straight this time, might not next time, but that's like, you know, it's she can still be a bisexual woman and have relations with a man. That's actually how that works.
That's the problem with bisexual. I mean, people's opinions on bisexuality in general is they don't understand that you can be with someone that's the opposite sex and still be bisexual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So many people take that away from bisexual people. It's sad to see that.
Oh, yeah. No. It, even to go even a little further into it, it is funny, that type of nerd, which is basically, you know, for lack of a better term, just really just only trying to protect their sexual desires around the character. Like the same thing with the outrage of She-Ra, you know, some people are like, oh, it's just because it's dumb. But there is a camp of people who are like, this isn't the She-Ra I remember, who, you know, was very sexy. Or whenever they make a character more modest and they get mad, it's like, you're not even, in my eyes, a real fan of this character. You only like this character for your sexual pleasure and think that no one should touch it to make you happy in a way that the character wasn't even built for in the first place. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, go to Rule 34 and get your rocks off. But leave, like, the actual art and the people, actual fans of the character, like, let them have the things they want, which is good story, progressive storytelling. Like, leave your, like, weird, you know, I'm not going to kink shame you, but leave it out of it.
You know the really funny thing just about Wonder Woman real quick? The really funny thing about Wonder Woman? So she has a totally queer origin story. There's actually a movie about her three creators, and it's a man and two women that were in a relationship at the time that were super into bondage.
Oh, wow.
And that's why Wonder Woman's power is the lasso of truth, and she would tie people up.
It makes sense.
So there's this whole, like, all of the queer undertones of Wonder Woman are absolutely intentional. It's
yeah.
A fascinating
Well,
story.
Do you remember even in the film, in the boat scene, when she was like, oh, no, I read about, you know, pleasures or whatever with a man and a woman, and he was like, and what did you find out? She's like, that we don't really need you.
Yeah, that's a great part.
That is a queer, like, moment of being like, yeah, no, we know how to pleasure each other. We don't actually need you unless we want to have children. So, like you said, the undertones, but, like, if you, it's there. It's there. But I wanted to know some of your favorite queer characters in gaming or in television and film or some of the fandoms that you are into.
That's a great question. I'm trying to think of, it's so weird, even thinking about, like, gay characters in video games, for instance, there's really so many. Like, who can you think of who's gay?
I was gonna say, Chris, you actually introduced me to America Chavez. You were the one that did, and she's a Marvel character.
Yeah, America Chavez is great. Batwoman's great. There needs to be a little bit more representation in video games, because I think besides, like, The Last of Us, I'm trying to think of a AAA title right now that has, like, a main character that is LGBT, and I can't think of one on the top of my head.
Yeah, there aren't very many, unfortunately.
Comic books, it's slowly turning around, but, I mean, we're even just fighting to get a woman. I mean, it's like we're finally getting a Captain Marvel movie. Like, it's finally just even getting a woman on screen, or finally getting Black Panther on screen. It's a long uphill battle.
I will say a character that I've always enjoyed, who I think has some serious, like, pizzazz and queer overtones, is Bayonetta. Like,
yeah.
All of the Bayonetta games are just super gay. I don't care what anyone says. That stuff is super
She's
gay.
A drag queen character, almost.
Basically, yeah.
And I don't mean that, meaning that she's a man posing as a woman. I mean, as far as, like, the culture goes and as far as how she uses her sexuality, it is very, and the way that she jokes and the undertones, it's a lot of almost, like, drag Sona type of stuff. Actually, the more that you say that, when you ask queer nerds, who do they find that represents them? It's usually a lot of female characters, because there aren't, there are not many gay characters, especially in video games. I think there was, like, The Ballad of Gay Tony, Grand Theft Auto 4.
Yeah.
That's another big one. It's been very lacking, obviously, in video games and nerd culture.
Yeah, and it's kind of sometimes that way where it is, once again, like, that off-screen type of stuff where it's like, oh, that person is gay. But The Division had a lesbian, kind of like your lead point person, which was Fei Lau. But once again, that was an off-screen stuff. But that one was a little tricky, because that's one of those games where you get story notes through, like, pickups and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there was anything that leaned heavily on it. But I know she... And that, I mean, that game as a whole, because it took place in New York, had a lot of a lot of like gay characters in it. Like the first doctor you help references her wife who died in this. And so, but like, it would be nice to have like something like The Last of Us where it's like someone that people can look at and be like, there it go right there.
And not have their sexuality. It's hard because you don't want it as a plot device and sense that it's like, we're a liberal company. Look at us. Like, that, I think that's why The Last of Us was so perfect. It's a part of her character. It affects who you are. It affects how you, your sexuality does affect so much about your personality. But it's hard to get that where it affects your personality, but it's not a stereotype, and the company's not using it to make a statement. They're like, this is just the character, and this kiss is because it's not a political statement. It's just we're showing a story, and romance is part of the story.
Mm-hmm. I do feel like some of them can be a little bit of a cop-out. I agree with that. In a different type of way, in the Latinx community, they recently had Jay Hernandez that was named as Magnum PI. And then people were like, okay, well, he's a Mexican man, so are you going to, like, address that at all? And they were like, not really, no. And it's like, okay, but his America, just by definition, is going to be a little bit different than the last guy. Like, his experience is, like you said, it's going to inform, it's going to shape his experience. And so for me, it's kind of like a cop-out to just make someone brown or make someone queer and then not address it at all. And so that kind of happened a little bit, I felt like, in 2007 with J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter, when she was attended the Q&A at Carnegie Hall and she revealed that Dumbledore was gay. And it was like, this is great. That's awesome. And then we thought, like, in Fantastic Beasts or like in other stuff, that it was going to be addressed, and it's not. And so I kind of am just like, okay. And, you know, I feel like they did that a little bit in Deadpool 2, where it's just like, you kind of say like, oh no, they're like, explore their sexuality. And it's like, great. Are we going to actually see them with another man? Like, are we going to actually see them be physical or something? And then they're not. And then I'm like, so it feels like you're just using this to say it. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
They're using it to kind of get the gay market on board on like Twitter. Like, they're getting the Twitter gays on, you know, like that type of audience, like people on the internet on board, but not enough for the casual moviegoers watching it to be offended. And I feel like that's kind of like with Dumbledore, that's a huge part of his story. And I don't get, I mean, I'm hoping it will be, you know, eventually explored, but I don't want to judge because I haven't seen the movie.
And I understand what we're saying. Like, no, that's not his whole entire identity, but like, it does feel a little bit like if you don't include it.
There's a way to, you don't want it to be like where it's shoved down. No one wants anything shoved down their throats, obviously.
Speak for yourself.
But there's a way to include it where it's still, your sexuality is always going to affect.
Feels genuine, maybe?
Yeah, and it's always going to affect some of your character decisions. It always will.
I think it's a really difficult line to walk, right? Because you want to portray queer and diverse characters in a way that is heartfelt and that is real, and you also don't want to lose your core audience that is middle America. So it's tough.
Yeah.
I think is my kind of thoughts on it.
Yeah, I know, and that's such an interesting kind of stance and walk, because are we helping or hurting by hiding, you know, this from middle America? Because lots of times in middle America, you know, I feel like it at times can be cop-outs, because I feel like middle America is the excuse that kept a movie like Black Panther from being made for so long, and then we saw how that did. A movie like Crazy Rich Asians come out for so long, and we thought how that did. And, you know, I think Moonlight did well, and I'm sure it didn't make that much money, but I think that's less because it tackled black gay issues and more because it was an art house film, you know. And though I think if you were to
love Simon this year, did really actually fantastic.
Yeah.
Speaking of, like, I mean, big budget, you know, movies, I think it did fantastic. And so many people watched this and were like, I mean, they're so happy that it was an LGBT film where it wasn't another person dying from the AIDS epidemic, where it was like just like it was a happy story, and it was just a silly 1980s style like romance comedy that just featured a guy looking for another guy, and it was just amazingly well done that people were like, oh, thank God. It wasn't this homosexuality. It was part of the movie. They tackled parts of it, but it wasn't like in a way where it was just a part. It was just a segment of it, and it was just part of his character.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a big part of it, too, is we're finally in the part where we can justify getting better movies made for those that are not straight and white and cisgender, right?
Yeah.
Like, in the past, all the gay movies were really stupid. And Love, Simon is like a really, really good movie. Like, the production value is good. The acting is good. The script is good. All of it's really good. Black Panther, another really good example. Mm-hmm. Like, everything about Black Panther was like AAA quality. Like it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And I think we're finally getting to that point where it's like, yeah, we can tell these stories and they will be interesting. We just have to do it right.
Yeah, 100%.
We are going to take a quick break and then come back and talk a little bit more about more of our favorite queer characters.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame starting May 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a six-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last two decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. I wanted to touch on the CW seem, their superhero shows, well, several of their shows, but definitely their superhero shows seem to be really taking initiative as far as including more queer characters. I know there's Thunder in Black Lightning. There's Curtis Holt on Arrow. There's The Flash's Captain Singh. There's Alex Danvers in Supergirl. Sarah Lance in Legends of Tomorrow. Ava Sharp in Legends of Tomorrow. Now we have Ruby Rose as Batwoman. I don't know if you saw that was announced.
Yeah, that's very exciting.
I think she'll be awesome.
And a main character, too. You know,
yeah,
I mean, like a huge
Batwoman
who's one of the most fascinating characters.
And, you know, if it was a few years ago and you told me that they would announce Ruby Rose as Batwoman and she would be getting tons of hate, I'd be like, oh, is it because it's a lesbian character? No, because nerds are bad.
Yeah.
And if they think you don't, because, you know, all nerds are the perfect casting director, all these great fan casting picks that we see. By the way, that's what's so funny is every time fans cast something, it's always trash. Or the budget would be insane. Or that person would not dedicate. Like, it's like, get out of here. Like,
Well, they were upset with, was it Heath Ledger when he was originally cast
as
the Joker?
That's so true.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's also, isn't Voltron have LGBT characters? Yeah.
They just confirmed it at Comic-Con, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and thinking of even video games, because I forgot this reference, Tracer from Overwatch, the one of the main faces of Overwatch is a lesbian, so...
Yeah,
slowly
I would be remiss if I didn't mention Steven Universe, which is brilliant, beautiful, such a positive, bright. I mean, even they, though, if he, even their fans are bad.
Yeah.
Bad. Want to like hit, I want to like roll up a newspaper slash like spray them.
But I also think it's the issue. I mean, Cannon sometimes deals with this working at PlayStation. There is sometimes a huge amount. It seems like it's a large number of people on Twitter,
right.
But it's because it makes people's voices sound bigger than it actually is. And a lot of times the internet will freak out about something. It doesn't necessarily reflect the majority. It doesn't reflect sales. It doesn't reflect the majority of a fan base.
Yeah.
It doesn't really reflect anything except for internet, you know, Twitter hype, which sometimes means absolutely nothing. It's bizarre.
Yeah, no, that's true. I know that you're good friends with Kelly Marie Tran, and she experienced like so much hate that she got off social media. But the thing is that when I was at Comic-Con, there were so many people dressed like Rose Tico that it was just, I mean, it flooded. Like, people just love her so much. But it's hard when like all you're seeing is
a small minority of Star Wars fans.
Very loud, obsessive harassment. Yeah.
Yeah, and the majority of Star Wars fans are super lovely, nice people. I think a lot of it has to do with, too, with people will have multiple accounts that they'll log into.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It makes, if you can have represent so many different people on Twitter that it allows to for a falsehood of what actually is. But it's also, I mean, it's why, you know, Kelly's not on, you know, Instagram.
Yeah, yeah.
It's because sometimes you don't need to read everything, all the negativity.
Yeah, and also it's one thing that's important to know. It may seem like when you're getting all the notifications and all the people in your mentions, you know, it may seem like, damn, this is a huge amount of people who think this. But only 7% of Americans are using Twitter. That's 7%.
What? You
know, wow. Yeah.
7%.
Gosh.
Of Americans are using Twitter.
That's a lot of fake accounts.
That's a lot of fake accounts, and that's a lot of like that's not a lot of people. So
yeah.
so that and you know what it is, I find that to be true because whenever something big happens on Twitter and you do kind of step out to the real world and you're like, "Have you heard of this?" and someone hasn't, you're like, "How?" But like when you see a number like that, 7%, you're like, I guess not. You know, yeah. I guess it isn't as big a world as we think it is. It feels that way.
It is people from other countries and smaller areas as well. I was also going to say, talking on the thing of online harassment, I mean, it's something that Cannon has had to deal with working with PlayStation and everything. I don't know if you can talk about that at all.
You get like death threats from LinkedIn.
They used to be really common. So back when the PlayStation Network was a little bit less reliable than it is now, anytime we'd have an outage, it's totally common for people that have PlayStation in their LinkedIn profile to get death threats in your inbox.
Wow.
It's fairly common. And it's endemic to the whole gaming industry. Like, I have female friends that work at studios, and a lot of them won't even put what the name of the studio they're working at because the game will get released, and then someone will be like, well, this level, this thing was misdesigned, so I'll go and find a female graphic artist and just start sending her death threats and hate mail. And then everyone just bandwagons. And
I remember that was a huge thing that happened with, I believe, Mass Effect, where they were blaming this one woman for ruining the game. And someone had to come in and be like, well, she didn't even have that huge a part of it. There was actually these men, but you guys are targeting her.
Yeah.
And it is interesting. And, you know, does PlayStation do anything to protect y'all? Like, can you report these people and, you know, get their accounts yanked or anything?
I mean, it depends on the social media you're using. I mean, LinkedIn has a pretty robust reporting system for offensive material, so it's not so bad. But
that's
eventually,
so insane. LinkedIn is like not the thing that you should be doing. Like, LinkedIn, you can see where they work and who that person is.
Yeah.
That doesn't, like, Twitter, I understand, because you're like a random anime avatar. But
anonymous,
like, LinkedIn, the fact that someone is, oh, man.
I mean, but the craziest thing is you would think that Twitter would have a more robust reporting system than LinkedIn, because LinkedIn, at least you're a level of professionals where Twitter should be doing everything it can. But we're learning more and more every day. I'm going to just leave it at that. You know, I'm just leave it at that.
Yeah. I think one thing, and this probably may sound crass, but you just sort of learn to rise above it and ignore it.
Yeah.
Because it used to really bother me, and then I just started saying, you know, none of this matters. Like, they're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
Like, these people are hiding behind a keyboard, and all the people that I run into, like, I have a, when we launched the PS4, everyone got jackets that said PS4 launch team, and I would just sometimes wear that out not thinking. And I would have people come up in grocery stores and in malls and just randomly, and they'd be like, oh my God, you worked on the PS4? can I shake your hand? And they just like, the fans are like the best part, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah. I think it's important to remember the good experiences more than the bad ones, because if we let the bad ones kind of occupy our mind space, then everything's going to just feel
It's
awful.
So difficult. I feel like for me, I look at it as a glass of water with the amount of sexual harassment that I deal with. And mm-hmm. I send it, Chris, I feel like you have been such a positive. I just want to take this moment. You're just smiling. You and Iffy have seen so much of the harassment that I've dealt with trying to be in this space. And I just, you both are very supportive men in my life. But I wanted to say, I look at it as like a glass of water, and it fills up, fills up, fills up, fills up. And then eventually I can't take it anymore and it overflows. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of spiral from the harassment, and I might take a break. I might step back. And it sucks. I agree, because I want to read all my comments. I want to mm-hmm. answer the messages. Yep. But that means I have to see all the really bad ones. Yep. And it's very hard mentally to handle that.
I think the scary thing is how Twitter is like the new KKK hood. I mean, I do mean that, though, because I mean, people, it's so crazy how people who are hateful, spiteful individuals, they do it in a way where they can still go to their day jobs. Like, you must mm-hmm. morally know deep down inside that you're doing something wrong and hateful if you're acting that way. But I think you're right. It's a lot of people who are on the internet. And I think a biggest way that I've used to combat hatred is with our group, meeting nerds
yes.
who are positive, whether it's queer people of color or just people who are loving, you know, people who are doing something for the better good. Whatever your group is, it's finding people in person to talk to, because mm-hmm. I think the best way to combat the internet hate is making a presence outside in person is the best way to combat that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to add, and I don't want to get too political, but, you know, a big part of the Trump election for me was processing how kind of awful it made me feel and how terrible I thought everything was. And what I eventually decided after kind of coming out of that fog was that, you know, I can't change anyone's mind. I can't fight the hate directly. But what I can do is I can spend my time, my energy, and my money on helping the people in my community and then building that up. And that's kind of what made me get into activism. It's why I volunteer at the center. That's why the LA Gaming Society is starting to have fundraisers for the queer youth of Los Angeles, so that we can get people, you know, onto a better track, so that they're not homeless or not alone, or they don't feel so depressed all the time by all this negativity. And I can say that by putting my focus towards those kinds of things, my outlook has improved exponentially. Even though the news on a fairly consistent basis
negative.
Is crazy, like having a positive outlet where I can take kind of that nervous negative energy and work it into something has made a world of difference for me.
Well, I mean, you saw, like, you see negative homophobic, like Kotaku would have like a negative, you know, this homophobic thing happened today. They didn't write about like our E3 party, how mm-hmm. we raised so much money for the,
it was over $5,000.
Over $5,000 just for video games for LGBT, you know, youth to play at the center. So that they can have an outlet, which is amazingly enough, by the way, video games is such a healthy outlet that brings people together. And then seeing people being brought together who are queer nerds, who are 30 to 40 years old, you know, who never had that outlet and in an adult space. I think there are positive things that are happening by us focusing on our community. I'm hoping that maybe the news can eventually pick up on some of those mm-hmm. positive
yeah.
articles.
Well, to quote a great movie by the name of Nightcrawler, if it bleeds, it leads, you know, and that's mm-hmm. that's what the news is in the business of. The moment the news became the business, it's less about, you know, sharing the news and more so what can we do that's going to, you know, activate people and get a reaction out of them and get them sharing our stuff. So yeah, it does. I find that in multiple communities and multiple things throughout the news scope, everything positive kind of gets swept under the rug because they'd rather get someone mad who's going to retweet it and then say something snarky than someone's going to add their snark. Me, usually I'm involved in that chain of snark and RT. But yeah, so it is, and I think that is a great advice to anyone in their communities, is if you are feeling hopeless, are feeling like, how do I make a change? Everyone thinks that, you know, I find that a lot of people believe that you need $1 million to make meaningful change, and that's just not the case. You know,
absolutely.
Meaningful change could just be as simple as mentoring, you know, someone who is, you know, just like you, or someone who you think needs it. You know, like I was thinking about the whole middle America excuse that we were talking about earlier. And I was like, to say that you don't think this movie will do well because of middle America is to say that you don't believe that there's a young gay kid in middle America, that there isn't a young Asian kid in middle America, there isn't a young black kid in middle America, or that there's no one in middle America that has the empathy to take in this story and enjoy it and understand it and like it. Because like Chris said, it's, you know, Simon being gay is a part of the story, but in the end, it's still a great story. And I feel like it's unfair to kind of scapegoat middle America. We often, based on the excuse that Hollywood likes to get away with this middle America, you're saying they are dumb, that they are all bigoted, it's all white, and it's all white males in right. middle America. And that's why you can never do it. When I wouldn't care if only one little black kid in Oklahoma got to see Black Panther, that would have made it work. Or one gay kid in, you know, Oklahoma who got to see Love, Simon. Like that to me is more powerful than, you know, 1,000 kids who are in a coastal city that, you know, can eventually hopefully find a community, you know?
But I think the problem is I think people just want good stories.
Yeah.
And the problem is like there will be a movie with a black superhero or a woman superhero that for whatever reason the development cycle someone doesn't believe in. They're like, they won't like this. Mm-hmm. They don't put the right resources into it. The actual movie, video game, whatever media format it is, isn't good because they didn't believe in it.
Yep.
And then it fails and they're like, see, I told you it wouldn't do well because people don't want women as superheroes. And you're like, no, it's because Catwoman was an awful, awful, like, it just wasn't a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But then you can.
I loved Catwoman, though.
I know, it for the wrong so... reasons. But then you see Wonder Woman, which was a well-written, you know, movie with the right cast and everything.
Right.
And it's like, as long as something is well-written, people will watch it. People will buy The Last of Us 2 because it's a well-written video game. They don't care that, you know what I mean, whatnot.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I did want to go over a couple of more queer characters before we moved on. One of them, Valkyrie, Tessa Thompson, real life couple Tessa Thompson and Janelle Monáe.
So
are
beautiful.
Just, I'm so glad they found each other because no one else deserves them. I don't know if you guys watched Luke Cage this season, but Shades, that was very exciting to have them openly, I guess kind of openly confirmed. At least I think the showrunner did confirm that he's queer and they actually had a moment of development for his character. So that was really nice. Yeah. The Walking Dead, my friend Ross Marquand plays Aaron on there.
Yeah.
And I believe that they also have Tara and...
very LGBT.
Yeah, yeah.
I think TV's the first format that's enough power gays have gotten involved with TV where we've slowly added our... You know, but we've shown that like with anything, all that matters is good writing, good story, good, you know, direction. And it... And everything else, it should be different characters and
viewpoints. Oh, Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Oh, yes,
so she's good. So badass. So I mean, good. I wish that they had done more to develop their like her relationship in Deadpool 2. Like, you know, she kind of was pretty much just a side character, which again we keep seeing. But I do. She's so cool.
But she actually requested that. So the actress who plays Negasonic Teenage Warhead is, I believe, pansexual or bisexual.
Oh.
And she was like, you can make my character lesbian, but I don't want it to be a thing in the movie.
Yeah. Like, and again, I get that. Like, we keep going back and forth of, like, I wish that they would address it more. Mm-hmm. But then, and maybe it's not necessarily that it needs to be addressed with her, but just because it's not addressed enough.
Yeah.
Well, I think they actually addressed it pretty well because it's like, here's me and my girlfriend. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And that's all they had to do. As long as it's not like some, like the Deadpool 2 director 2 years later coming out saying that she was a lesbian the whole time. And then it's like, okay, you know what I mean? Like they address, as long as you just
It's
fine.
I mean, not that necessarily. I mean, having character development, like being able to have a character growth with your romantic partner.
I mean, I just missed her in the movie in general. Like I just wanted more of her in general.
Yeah. And then two other just main points that I want to say. Steven Universe had the first cartoon lesbian wedding.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. That's really cool.
That is so cool.
Like, you know, it's not something that they'd probably be able to do even 5 years ago. I don't know. Yeah. Cartoon Network. And then Batgirl in the comics had the first transgender wedding in the comics. I believe that was when Gail Simone was still writing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And North Star had a wedding issue as well.
Cinna Grace, who I got to meet on a DC shoot that I did. He is doing Iceman. I don't know if you follow that at all, but mm-hmm. He has had a coming out moment in the comics, and then it's kind of his development as a superhero, but also having to deal with coming out.
Which is great, because especially as if nerds are from, you know, a community where their parents are, you know, probably homophobic or whatever, they can just like sneak in an Iceman, you know, a comic, and their parents are gonna say that was me as a kid.
It's a comic book, Mom.
It's a comic book, and their parents are gonna be like, oh, it's this masculine looking character. They're not gonna say anything. So they're writing something, I think, more than what's needed, more than they probably know by doing that.
Yeah.
I think we need to take a quick break, but when we get back, we're going to jump into the rest of this and keep it spicy.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame starting May 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a six-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last two decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh. Hey, what's up? It's your boy. You know who it is. Iffy, still here with Danny and our wonderful guests, Christopher and Cannon. And we're talking about, I feel like it's a real open discussion about, you know, LGBTQ and nerddom. And I think it's real cool.
Thank you for joining us and letting us.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us. This is fun.
I will say I'm real excited, too, for the nerd fam that's going to check this out, because I've seen nerd fam tweet net at me, and they'll have the rainbow flag in their screen name. And, you know, that's how we know. I like that we've for lack of a better description, planted our flags in our Twitter, where it's like, you know, Nigerians will throw the Nigerian fans. Yeah. Dominicans love putting that Dominican flag in their joint, you know. The LGBTQ community has the rainbow flag. We all know where we at, just so you know who you're talking to.
Well, it's cool because even like PlayStation changed their icon during Pride Month to Pride symbol.
Funimation did too, and I was really happy about that.
It's funny because you had like a lot of bitter people, and sometimes a few of them were straight, so I was like, chill, that were like, oh, the consumerism of the da-da-da-da-da-da in this. And Guy Branum did a real funny joke of being like, oh, I'm sorry that for once we're being accepted and not burned at the stake and it, making you feel bitter. Like, it was really great. Of course, I'm not doing it as great as Guy because Guy
is people
amazing.
Would tweet at Funimation and they would just reply with gay anime GIFs. And I loved it so much. Because they also own that, like, volleyball, the volleyball boys one.
Oh, yeah, and the swim team.
The swim team one.
Funimation.
Just reply to everybody.
You were at that event, right?
Yeah.
Where they just had like a bunch of boys in Speedos, and then girls were yelling. I was like, "What is going on?"
Oh yeah, it was. It was
Funimation's
lots of yelling.
My family.
I love them. I love them so much.
I remember one. And somebody, you can get in there. I remember once I was announced as like a host on something, and someone was like, "I'm sorry, but do you even know anything about Dragon Ball?" And someone, one of the Funimation people, went on the account and was like, "Oh, she knows," and like tweeted it out to everybody.
I also have to say they've been very supportive because Danny has put us in contact with Funimation, and just as a gay video game, you know, group. Funimation has donated so much,
so
especially when we had our E3 after party. Just a shout out, Funimation gave us stuff, Square Enix gave us a ton of stuff, and of course PlayStation, you know, gave us all of these free PlayStations to give out. So it's great that, you know, they've
it's
been
nice
supportive.
To feel supported.
Dang, old awesome. PlayStations, huh? Ooh.
The weird thing is we still get like, we had like Nintendo nerds show up and they're like, where's our Switch? And we're like, well, I mean,
we
yeah.
It's a PlayStation event.
It's a PlayStation event. And yeah, good luck with getting Nintendo to sponsor anything LGBT.
All right. Well, let's talk about speaking of finding your space.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the first gay space on the internet. It was called SOC.MOTSS.
Sockmots.
Yeah. And it basically anticipated how we use social networks today, right? In 1983, programmer Steve Dyer started a discussion forum called NetMots, later SockMots, on the Usenet news group system. Fun fact. So I had this super hyper nerd who I went to high school with. I forget his name, but I remember he was very practical. And he told me, and it's so funny because I was mad then, and now I'm even more mad because he was right. Because I used to do art, and I would like do the art, and then I would tell him like the whole story behind like the comic I was trying to make and all this stuff. And he straight up to my face was like, "Yeah, your art's not good, but you'd probably be an amazing writer." And
wow,
I remember being like, "This dude." And, like, I'm a professional writer now, so he kind of called it.
He wasn't wrong.
Yeah, I'm mad about that.
Was that your gay friend that told you that?
No.
It was a sassy gay friend. I
know. It does sound like a sassy gay friend. Girl, you'll be a great writer.
He was this other dude. He was, like, almost the opposite. He was, like, a Jehovah's Witness. And I, like,
maybe gay.
So probably gay is what you're saying. Yeah.
But he was really into building computers, and this was like back when I was a freshman, so this was hella new to me. And he had this guy who was like his kind of mentor and was teaching him about building computers, and he was like, "You got to check out this thing called news groups. News groups are where it's at. You got to go on news groups." And he kind of told me how to do it, but I never figured out how to work. I had like the client to launch into news groups, but like it's crazy reading about, because news groups was like early internet stuff.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Is it SockMots? That's what someone will correct us probably.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say MOTS stood for members of the same sex.
Yes.
And so it was it essentially had threads, and it was a way for people to talk and members to talk.
And it was actually one of the biggest membership communities of the early internet. And it's really interesting because you can still go search on SockMots and see all of these forums from the 80s.
It's all still there.
And the first, almost like the first time of like gay communication then. And especially during a, you know, troublesome time of the AIDS epidemic and everything. Mm-hmm. It was, as a gay person, it's really hard because it's not like, you know, when you have a Latina family or a Black family behind you, you have people to kind of give you your culture. Not just are we not born from obviously gay parents, but a lot of people from the 80s died. And a lot of these amazing, innovative LGBT people are dead now. And we will never really, we'll get their stories told to us it's great to see the conversation still there in print.
That's so cool.
Talking about dealing with some of the same things that our community still faces. And seeing that in print just made me feel like just I got really emotional reading some of it because I was like, wow, this is what. And also how little things have changed. You can kind of see how the early development of internet talked. Like it was very much like reading a gay Reddit thread of people just back and forth, just talking about. I think there was even just like a huge debate on Speedos or something. It was like a weird of like Speedo colors. And I was like, this is something that would still just be on my Facebook feed now.
I know that is wild because it is. Because there's one thing when you look at movies that portray a time and like, you know, especially like if you, for lack of a better movie, even though this movie it was problematic AF, but like it was about the riots.
Stonewall. Yeah.
But like you'll have Stonewall.
It had all white gay cast.
Yeah.
Which I mean, black trans women are what they've really lay the groundwork for the LGBT movement. Yeah. They did so much for us, and to see them just being completely underrepresented when they did so much work, and then just to see white gay men in the front of this movie it's so sad.
Man. I mean, they still do. It's crazy.
We're getting what's the show? Pose.
Pose
is finally giving black trans women, I mean, just trans women in general, the most underrepresented group in this country, just a voice that they need. I think that's so cool about members of the same sex, this group, is that like also you hear movies. There's so many movies about the AIDS epidemic, and to finally actually see what the conversations were just like.
Yes.
It wasn't a published article. It was just like people conversing about AIDS, a lot of misinformation, a lot of people that just had no idea what was happening, and just see those conversations just typed up is something that if it wasn't for this, we would not be able to experience anything like seeing.
And that's what the point I was making is, like, when you see that portrayed in movies, you are getting this kind of dramatized, kind of assumed idea of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And this is just cold, hard facts. These are what the people at the time were talking about. Like, imagine if you can go back to, like, the civil rights movement and see, like, you know, the sneak shots that Malcolm X and Martin Luther King were shooting at each other on the forums. Like, you're getting a very real representation, and that I think is something that's going to be cool about the future, is like when we move from now, people are going to be able to pull the things that we've said, and it's not going to be a question of, you know, this is kind of like what the general idea was. You have it right there.
It's also, I think it's why there are so many LGBT nerds, is because most people, I mean, Cannon and I came from both very homophobic backgrounds. And I think we both latched on to video games and nerd culture because that was our safe space. That was our space for figuring out what being gay is. That the first person I ever told that I was gay to was an internet friend that I've still to this day I've never, you know, met. But someone that I would, that was the first person, because that was safe to me, was telling someone on the internet when I was, you know, young enough. That was the only safe space for us. That's the only way to find information. That was the only way, especially in small rural towns. That's it.
I mean, so. And that's so interesting to me, if you don't mind elaborating. What was that experience like? What was the reaction?
You know, when I first came out to my parents, it was one of the most difficult times ever. I didn't talk to my mom for like months afterwards. And it kind of makes me feel sad and a little empty that the only loving and supporting relationship that I could have to tell someone was someone on the internet that I would never get that comfort from. It was a straight guy on the internet that I played an online game with, but that was the only person I felt comfortable with and the only person that I had. And it's kind of why, I mean, Cannon and I both gravitated towards finding this, you know, LA Gaming Society, is so that we could get people who are queer nerds to actually be able to meet up and actually feel like they have a support group. Because even though LA is very liberal, there are so many places outside of LA, California, that are very, very homophobic, people that don't have homes. And it's hard enough for someone that's young and charismatic to move to LA and be beautiful. for people who it's difficult for them to talk to, we have to give them a safe space, because I feel like no one's fighting for them. And no one really fought for us, so we kind of had to do something to kind of create a space. And that's why, I mean, Cannon's family to me, you know, because we had to create our own family. And I don't know, the internet, we would have never had lags if it wasn't for Reddit, for, you know, the gay forums. I mean, you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that there's a lot there, but I think you're exactly right. I think, you know, gaming for so many people is their outlet, because a lot of people live in a situation or in a circumstance that is dire or is frustrating or is sad. So the nice thing about gaming is, you know, that can be an outlet and escape for everyone. The downside of that is a lot of people take that negativity with them from whatever suffering it is that they mm-hmm. have, and they bring it into that space. And that's why you have the homophobia and the misogyny and the racism and all the ugly parts, right? And a lot of people, I think, don't realize that they're bringing that with them. So when you're queer, like we are, and you want to have your outlet, right? You want to have that thing you grew up with, where you bonded, and you want to have that safe space where you can play those games and just enjoy yourself, right? So, and to kind of bounce off what you said, I'm a big proponent of creating your own family. It's something that a lot of queer people have to do, because we don't really have another option.
Yeah.
So creating that queer family around something like gaming has been a really, really great experience. And I think it is something we fought really hard for over the past few years, but it's worth it. Like we just had a meetup last weekend on Sunday, right? We just took a bunch of nerds to the beach. And it's like every time we have a new meetup, we always meet new people from different countries and different counties and different places, like from all over. And they're just like, yeah, my friend, you know, told me about this group because I didn't have any friends when I moved here, and my family doesn't talk to me when I came out. And this is really cool. Like, I've never met this many gay people before.
And most of the time, they're connected from meeting someone from the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why nerd culture is so important, and why mm-hmm. internet culture is so important for us, because, I mean, I just can't imagine what it would be like or where I would be without the internet and being able to meet people and find people that were like me. You know?
I think a lot of people can relate to their internet friends almost being closer than in real life people that they know. I know I see that a lot in Discord. Iffy and I used to host at a channel called Hyper RPG, which is a very positive channel, but they had a very positive Discord of people that could talk about their problems and issues in a way that they wouldn't be able to around their family. And I found that so, I would pop in there and be talking about things and harassment and stuff that I was dealing with, and they would all come to my aid. But it was just so nice to see the positive parts of nerddom, like you were saying, and to remind ourselves of that.
Yeah, that it's not all Gamergate and crazy.
Yeah.
Just death threats towards
angry
women.
Anime avatars.
That's a small, and at the same time, they're trying to find a movement that they can latch on to that makes them feel like they're a part of something, and they're angry about other things besides just, but that is just being projected the wrong way. All we can do is create positive movements and hopefully get people that might be a part of this. You know, there are a lot of people, for instance, that are in Gamergate that are really, really great people that are just have a lot of misinformation, that just want to be a part of something and they want to change the gaming industry and they want things to be positive, but they have a lot of misled information and they start taking out, or they might not even take things out on women, but they support other people that do. And I think all we can do is create positive groups where they feel like people who feel like they need to be a part of something can latch onto those positive groups and create something mm-hmm. positive.
Yeah. Iffy, I was going to say, I think that we might have to
take this in for a landing.
I know. I wanted to touch on Star Trek, but I think that
Danny was like, I'm scared someone's going to, you know, be mad that we didn't talk about LGBT things, because Star Trek was a huge part of.
What I am going to say is I did want to address that, but I'll address that on our Star Trek episode, actually. So, Cannon, we might have to have you back for that, because that's something that you.
I would love that.
Yes.
Then you can talk about gay Star Trek.
Oh, exactly. Well, we need just to talk about the lack of it for a huge part, and then how it just kind of came in. But anyways, where can everyone find you? And if people want to join any of your organizations, if you could let us know.
Yeah, you can type up LAGS. That's LAGS, LA Gaming Society, GAY Gaming Society on Facebook. We have a Facebook group. Would love to add you on there. My name is at Tinder Chris on Instagram and Twitter. Also, just as a plug, check out Cooking on High on Netflix. That's a show I'm on. We need a season two. So I need money. So please watch Cooking on High on Netflix and get me a job. Canon?
Yeah, feel free to add me on Facebook if you're so inclined, if you're into more nerdy fun stuff and video games. I love expanding my online family. Also find me on Instagram at canon.gif.
Yeah, reach out to Tinder Chris and canon.gif on Instagram. We love helping out. Like, by the way, if there are any young queer listeners or anyone that needs help or any advice, you can reach out to us and we'd love to give you advice and help you guys out.
Yes. And I also love the anime posts. You have the funniest Instagram stories, Chris. I go through all of them.
It's all Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z names.
That's why I love them.
With butt sex jokes.
Yeah, in there too. I am at Ms. Danny Fernandez. Please check out our Tee Public. Everyone's been loving the shirts. We did a giveaway. We'll probably do one again in the future, but in the meantime, go grab some shirts. I'm going to get the Batman one. I'm really excited. Yeah. We look dope as hell. Oh, I will be at New York Comic Con, so I get to announce my panel. Yes, I'm so excited to share some news with y'all. But yes, if you're going to be at New York Comic Con, I will also be there. This is my first time, so tell me what to do. And I have a panel on Friday that I get to announce in a little bit. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. I was waiting for you to announce it and you didn't say anything. I have a pass. I'll probably be hanging out. You know, you might see me there. You might not. Pay attention. catch me at Ify Wadiwe, IFYNWADIWE on Twitter and Instagram. IFDs on Twitch. Thank you all the nerd fam coming through, dropping those Twitch Prime subs. And here is your regular reminder that if you Twitch Prime sub, you got to do it every month. It doesn't auto renew. I need them bucks, baby. Thank you so much. I love y'all. And as always.
Wait, I wanted to say, please tweet at us your favorite queer characters or like when you first found yourself represented.
Yeah, anything that we might have missed, we need any references to.
Yeah, we probably missed a lot. Yeah. So help us out.
Definitely do that. Tweet it. We gonna retweet you. Share the love. Really want y'all feeling nice and represented because, like our motto says, it's a nerdy deep dive for everyone. Don't make me do the tweet where I retweet you, then I drag you, then I go to the part where it says a nerdy deep dive for everyone and zoom in on everyone. You know what I'm talking about, and you know what I'm asking you not to do. So don't do it. But on that note, stay nerdy, everyone.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame starting May 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.